We are honored to be able to collaborate with our friends from the Elaborate Topics podcast. And as such, our very own Aaron Odegaard recently had the privilege of joining Stephanie Whitehead from Elaborate to interview Mark Ashog, CEO of Thresholds, about leading with love. Additionally, we would like to dedicate this episode to Carlene Van Sicklen. Carlene is a beloved colleague, mentor, and leader in the field of laboratory medicine, and over the course of her incredible career, spanning over three decades, has helped shape the careers of hundreds of laboratory professionals. So join us as we journey beyond the Petri dish.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again today. This is Stephanie Whitehead and
Aaron Odegaard.
Hi. For those who have not listened to me today or before, I'm Stephanie Whitehead again, and I am the co-host of Elaborate Topics. If you haven't heard about Elaborate Topics, if you've been under a rock with your back to the wall and your fingers and your ears for the last 4 years, the Elaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself, Taiwana Wilson and Lona Small bring you weekly messages to help you excel inside and outside of the laboratory. And my collaborator, my co-podcaster for today is Aaron. Go ahead, Aaron, tell the people about yourself.
So as far as Elaborate, you would have to be under a rock not to have heard some Elaborate. So I'm kind of fresh to the scene. I'm actually a co-host of the podcast Beyond the Petri Dish. So we talk about microbiology, but we dive further into lab issues. So we talk about some things like lab developed tests, which we're all excited about, and outbreaks and that kind of fun thing. So my co-hosts are Kyle McGee. He's a lab educator and innovative industry guy, and Heather Nutting. And so she's also in industry as well, and a teacher and a microbiologist. So we're all bringing dynamic things, and we're kind of excited to be collaborating with you guys.
And so, you know, Aaron and I have known each other for a while. We frequent some of the similar circles. Aaron and I were put together in a very a very funny way. We've got a funny way of how we met each other. We'll tell that on another podcast. Listen to our podcast and you might hear that story of how we met. But we've known each other, what would I say now, 5 years, Aaron?
Yeah, 2019, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like I've always known you, though. It feels like
I agree with that. Friend. Yeah.
Where have you been all my life?
In Florida. We both had to go to Phoenix, Arizona to meet each other.
But we did. And so we met each other in Phoenix, Arizona, and we had our 5th year anniversary of our Phoenix, our first Phoenix meeting recently, where Aaron and I were at an event, co-volunteer duties. We were at an event recently in Phoenix, Arizona, and we both had the opportunity to hear the most dynamic keynote speaker. His name was Mark Ashog, and he is the CEO of Thresholds, and he did a keynote called Leading with Love. And following that, there was a dinner where, you know, there is an Elaborate Topics episode where we talk about getting ready for a conference. And as part of that, I always try to make a goal for myself at every conference that I go to. And the goal that I had for this particular conference was to get outside of my own box and to network with people I had not networked with before. And one of those people was the keynote. And so at the dinner, I corralled my mental support and emotional support friend, Aaron. And I said, we are going to talk to the keynote. And Aaron, what did you say? You looked at me kind of funny. You were like, what, us?
Let's go.
Let's go. And so Aaron and I are both big fans of the Mel Robbins podcast, Mel Robbins books, everything Mel Robbins. And we did our 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. If you don't know what that is, look up Mel Robbins and her, you know, action first mantras. And we did the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we just went for it. And we talked to this keynote speaker. We continued that conversation and we got him on our podcast. I'm so proud of us.
I am too. So sometimes you got to be brave and you've got a thought to go do something. Be brave, get up, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we got to speak to an amazing innovator. So it's just so exciting that we got to talk to him even more. And we got to bring it to you guys.
I want to hear your thoughts, but the reason I felt like he would be so pivotal and so inspirational to have on both of our platforms is because his talk was called Leading with Love. And, you know, Mark's keynote really struck me as a leader in the laboratory, where many days you are fighting your own emotions as you're leading. You're trying to come into work with a good mood. You're trying to infuse that mood onto your team to really motivate them, to really give them a vision of where the lab is going, and really not allow any of the outside forces that can affect you in doing that to affect you. You know, earlier this year, Lona, Taiwan, and myself did a talk about the power of positive psychology. And in that talk, I talked about a recent study from UKG that said that so many people feel like their managers have the most impact on their mental health. And that's why I think it was so important. You know, your manager, you're at work so many hours of your day. And if you have a manager that is rude or is micromanaging or is demanding or, you know, is just extremely negative, it does have an impact on your mental health. And that's why I thought this was really important. What about you, Aaron? How did that
yeah, no, I would agree with that. I would agree with you on that too. Your lab leadership or your manager can have a huge impact. I've been at the beginning of my career and had people that potentially shouldn't have been leading as managers or supervisors, and they impacted they set the tone, the vision of kind of how people were, how your day-to-day can be, and just the little interactions. And then to go from that to an amazing manager who's always very supportive and sponsoring and wants to hear and help you celebrate victories and even just small little things that you wouldn't even think of mattering mean a lot to people. So that was definitely something that when he was talking just kind of hit close to home, that we as lab leaders need to be aware of of the people around us and the impact we have. And Stephanie, you're definitely right about not letting, it's easy to let the outside things kind of impact you as you're coming in to, and you're tired, to be like, okay, I'm just exhausted. What do I do now? But to make sure you keep that positive kind of leading with love framework as you're going throughout your day makes a huge difference. So,
well, I'm proud of us, Aaron, for stepping on a limb and doing something that we think will really positively impact our friends and our colleagues and all of our listeners. And so without further ado, here is the recording that we did with Mark, the CEO of Threshold, about his talk that he's been doing for many years in many different arenas about leading with love. So I hope you enjoy it. All right. Thank you, listeners, and welcome back. We have got an amazing guest in the house with us today. We're extremely excited. Aaron and I had the opportunity recently to hear this dynamic speaker at an event in Arizona, and we definitely wanted to bring him on both of our platforms to elaborate on the keynote that he gave to us. And we've got with us Mr. Mark Eschick.
That's good. I'm completely open. I just found, somebody just sent me an article or a picture of me and my husband from 29 years ago. They found in the basement, and it said Mark Eschang, Ishang. So I respond to anything as long as it's relatively kind and polite, you know.
So. Well, Mark, we started a good thing of calling you the love guy.
The love guy. Yeah, I try my hardest. Some days easier than others.
That's exactly what we're going to talk about today. Yeah. Mark is a dedicated professional, and he has spent his career advocating for the rights of stigmatized and vulnerable people. He is the CEO of Thresholds and has overseen expansive growth and a culture shift that has embraced change and innovation, transparency, and love. Mark is known to us as the love guy now, and that's exactly what we'll be talking about today. So thank you for joining us, Mark.
Oh, thank you, Stephanie and awesome. Aaron. It's great to be back with you 2 weeks, 2 weeks later. I think it was 2 weeks today, or was it only a week ago? Time is so...
it keeps flying by. I don't even know.
Yeah, but I know it was a Thursday morning at 8 o'clock or so in the desert. So, and here we are.
And so I get the pleasure of kind of asking the first question to getting the discussion going. So like Stephanie was saying, we got to hear your amazing keynote at our conference, Leading with Love. So I was kind of curious just kind of what leading with love means to you personally, and how does it differ from other leadership approaches that you've tried in the past?
Yeah, so I actually have tried my whole life unsuccessfully. To lead with love from the time I was very young to now at 60 as CEO of Thresholds, a big community mental health organization in Chicago. You know, as I've said before, I think, you know, I'm so privileged. Many, many people in the world don't grow up loved, and I did. And so because of that sort of luck of the draw to have parents and grandparents and community that embraced and loved me, in Chicago for who I was and who I am. It's sort of just something that became sort of part of my DNA. You know, maybe I was born with it. You know, I think in Buddhist tradition, there's a lot of talk about sort of original goodness as opposed to original sin. But a lot of us, all of us are born with goodness. So hopefully that's partly true. And then, you know, just luck and good fortune and family, et cetera. But, you know, when I joined Thresholds, this large community mental health organization, 12 years ago, it was really at that point that I made a very conscious decision as a leader. I was 12 or 15 years into my CEO-dom prior to that at the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, that, and now at this mental health organization, that that's just what I was going to do to lead. I sort of joke, guys and gals and people and humans, that I wasn't qualified, quote unquote, to lead any way, other way. I wasn't not a psychologist. I'm not a clinician, not a social worker. I'm just a sort of policy guy and somewhat of a good, try to be a good leader. But that was going to be my philosophy. You know, there's so many different books on leadership, and I've read a whole bunch of them, and there's Leading with Purpose, and there's, you know, Leading with Strength, and you could call what I talk about compassion. You can call it empathy. You can call it kindness. You could call it openness. You know, I just chose to word. I choose the word love because I love it. But you know, I think there's many different ways to approach this particular topic. I'm not sure that Harvard Business School or Stanford or U of C are doing courses right now. Maybe on business ethics, but I'm not sure if they're doing any courses on leading with compassion and love. Though really quickly, and I'll stop talking. I was on a panel last Thursday. Oh, so yeah, you were 2 Thursdays ago. I was last Thursday at Leading for Good, and I was the final panel at this Leading for Good conference. And my final words were that if you lead with love, it leads to good. So that's basically what I try to do every day.
I think what captivated Aaron and I, and we definitely wanted to corner you the first opportunity we got after your keynote was, you know, because we are both leaders in the laboratory and we know how hard it has been in our profession, not just for healthcare, but particularly in the laboratory, because so many people are looking for the purpose through the leading and really trying to continue to inspire their staffs, you know, and help with retention and recruitment and all of the things while still keeping a hold of productivity and, you know, still trying to create a vision while being new leaders themselves. And we really felt like your message could be something that could help and continue to inspire people as they're going through their daily leadership journeys. And what was also interesting to me was your role as a CEO and how much you've been able to transform thresholds and have such incredible wins and do so much at thresholds with the model or the mantra of leading with love. And so I want to ask, how do you balance, you know, all of the pressures of being a CEO, leading a huge organization, so many, you know, demands on your job with, you know, productivity and efficiency, et cetera, but you balance that with also leading with love?
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. So, so love and productivity and efficiency and effectiveness and huge results and huge wins, of course, are not mutually exclusive. I guess there's possibly ways to get all these big wins and not lead with love. And maybe some people are doing it. I don't see a lot of it out there, or at least I don't see these big, long, sustainable wins where people are treated well at an organization, where they feel a connection to the organization, where staff feel they have investments in the short and the long term in the organization, if it's not led with love. You know, I joke in my talk that he on my gravestone, if I have one, or when they write up my obituary, it will say that he loved and he got stuff done, because I really believe that. Love is fantastic. I'm actually sitting here in my dining room and I'm looking at three love paintings. It says love, love, love. Three different. It's a triptych, actually, that one of our clients at Thresholds did. It was actually a four thing, not a three thing, but I gave one of the love things away to a neighbor after they had a baby. So I still have three. But so it's just fun to be looking at that while I'm talking about this. You know, I think as a CEO, as a manager, as a director, whatever level you are in an organization, you got to get the work done. Your staff, your clients, your consumers, your boss. I mean, everybody's counting on you to get the work done and to get it done well. I believe that you can motivate clients, you can motivate staff, you can motivate board members and community members and donors through love. And, you know, I've read a lot lately, a lot of criticism about people who use love as a strategy. I'm like, oh my God, it's the most strategic thing you can do. If you use hate and anger and apathy and dissing people as a strategy to get more votes, to win an election, to get, you know, to move up. I mean, those are strategies that people use. And I'm like, no, the antidote to this, the opposite of this to lead to success and efficiency and effectiveness is love. And you know, I mean, in the talk that I do, and you've heard it, I give a lot of data. So, you know, I'm not just sort of making this up, though. I have great anecdotes. The data is clear. Researchers around the country, including those that have published in Harvard Business Review and beyond, people that have written books on this, show that the evidence is clear and growing that love and compassion and empathy do drive great results. So. And at Thresholds, as you mentioned, the results have just been astonishing in the last 10 years in best workplace awards, in new grants that we never thought possible, expansion into new areas of service. I think all of this happened because of our leadership and management philosophy. And then one thing, and then I'll be quiet. I know you have so many questions, I didn't create love, for sure. I think it's original to all of us. And I certainly didn't create it at Thresholds. But what I think I did was bottled it and took it from now my 1,300 employees who exemplify this ethos every single day and amplified it because I have a loud voice and I have a platform. So I really want to give all the credit, you know, to the success of Thresholds and other places that I'm involved with, I just have the privilege of being the leader, but I'm taken from the front line and providing their love to a bigger audience. So that's the privilege of being the CEO, right?
I mean, now that you've got it bottled, I'm expecting a shipment of that love to come down to Jacksonville, Florida, to our lab. I'm ready. Our new leaders need a couple bottles of it. Okay. Ready to go.
Happy to share. I'm all about sharing the love.
Put the Amazon link in the show notes.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Gotta have that love Prime membership. It'll get you there. but I do love the fact that you show like a very data-driven process, like and working lab quality. So it's all about, you can use data to tell stories and show great outcomes. And the fact that leading with love, you're bringing people along, you're being inclusive, you're giving them those great opportunities, and they want to grow, which is great. So for those leaders that are a little skeptical or kind of hesitating about adopting more of a leading with love kind of approach, do you have any kind of advice that would help them embrace the concept of leading with love a little bit?
So great question, Aaron. I would actually, with these folks, I would actually start with a question for them, though. Why not? Why wouldn't you at least try this? And they might say, oh, I'm afraid of HR. If I use the word love, am I going to get in trouble with HR? Or if I use the word love or kindness or show empathy, am I going to appear too soft? How am I going to, you know, drive results and have hard conversations if I show kindness and empathy, you know, to anybody that I work with and just don't do, you know, X, Y, and Z and, you know, keep all that fluffy, soft and mushy stuff at home. So I would just ask them, like, why? Like, what makes you think that a quality that clearly at home, I hope you use the word love with family, with your children, with your spouse. I know people use it with their dogs all the time. I mean, doesn't everybody say they love their dogs? So if you do this, and if you talk about love at church, or you sing a love song in the radio as you're, you know, singing along or in the shower, it just seems so bizarre to me that in every place in your life, from the shower to the car to the living room to, you know, your temple, that you think that somehow this 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, or in our case, sometimes it's 6 in the morning till 10. So we spend too much of our waking hours at work with people that in general, I think that we want to love and be loved by. So I would just ask really the question, why not? And if you are at all open to it, then let's figure it out. Because you can do this and you can do it respectfully and you don't cross boundaries and you don't get in trouble with HR and you don't have your lawyers breathing down your throat. You know, I mean, and I think it's really in the little things. So I would also encourage people, like, how do you interact with employees just on a regular sort of day-to-day basis without ever using the word love? So really one quick example, and it's just so tiny that it's almost meaningless probably, but we were at a going away party last week for a long-term employee who I do love. But there was another employee there who I also love and just, but pulled her aside. I'll be gender neutral here. I pulled them aside just to ask a question, not about work. And it was quiet enough and private enough to ask about somebody in her family that I knew was hurting for various reasons. And because I knew that this person in her family was hurting, I knew that they and their partner were hurting. So I just wanted to touch base. And it wasn't that even 3 minutes. But the impact that I think that had, you know, and they even told me, like, wow, just, you know, thank you. Thank you for caring. Thank you for taking a minute. You know, just, and thank you for asking. And it's so not important, really, but it's so important. And I think it's these kinds of things that, you know, have exponential impact. And I could come up with 1,000 examples of that. And, you know, and you also have to be comfortable in your own skin to do that. You know, I talk a lot about vulnerability too. Speaking of vulnerability, if you or your listeners have ever heard of Brené Brown from Texas, who has sort of written the book on vulnerability. Well, I saw her last Thursday, and you can imagine I was like a kid in a candy store. I could hardly sit in my seat. And I was only 10 feet away from her at a church in Chicago. And she was talking and she was interviewing a New York Times columnist. And so I only bring that up because I love her. And I thought,
I do too. Yeah.
Why not hear if some of your pod listeners also give a shout out to Brené Brown. It's funny, when I started at Thresholds 12 years ago, I didn't know who she was. And after I said something as a new CEO, somebody pulled me aside and said, "You sound like Brené Brown." And I'm like, "Who is that? I need to know who that is." So anyway, I probably didn't even answer the question. I talked so much, I forgot what it was.
You did. So I actually got chills at one point, but it's the little things that matter the most. It's those little moments that people don't really think about that are those key moments that can change someone's life or how they're doing, or just can impact them greatly. So even 3 minutes. So that, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. People are going through so much in our offices and our labs and our outreach teams. People are at every age. I mean, we know that young people, especially who, sort of suffered at school, at home, and, you know, the pandemic impact on education and education outcomes for young people and their parents, and, you know, everything going on in the world, domestically, internationally, you know, social media and chat bots replacing real live relationships. All of this stuff has just had such an impact on our mental well-being, and therefore, I think, on our success in work and in life. And so part of like dealing with all of these fastly moving and evolving realities, very few of which we have control over, you know, what do we as leaders do have control over? And I think one of those things is how we treat each other
for success. I completely agree. And one of the things I liked about your talk is you mentioned, you know, if you are going back to Aaron's question, if you aren't comfortable with love, you know, you don't have to use love. It's leading with mindfulness, it's leading with compassion, it's leading with care. And that's exactly what you did in that example. It takes me back because our organization, unfortunately, had to care for patients after two national mass shootings. And following that, we took the opportunity to become a trauma-informed care organization, which really is all about just understanding the trauma that people may be going through. You know, if I were employed during the first mass shooting where we took care of these patients, the second one may trigger something in me, or, you know, I may have had a personal incident, or maybe my own loved one is sick, and, you know, all of these things. You're just really being mindful as you're leading about the words that you use, about, you know, the changes in behavior. If somebody's coming in late and they're typically on time, hey, is there something going on that I can help you with, rather than reacting with a punitive nature. So I love that you gave that example. As we wrap up, because we know you're a busy CEO out there in a big city, are there any final takeaways or action items that we can leave our listeners with that can help them as they're going along their leadership journey and their career paths?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. Be your authentic self. I know that sounds sort of cliche, but I just think, especially in leading with love, it has to be authentic, and you have to do it authentically. And if it's like, again, if those are not the words that you want to use, please find words that fit who you authentically are. You know, I think I mentioned in our dinner, or when we met after the talk, that, you know, I have all these fabulous people in my C-suite. I have a big team, a diverse team of 10 or 11 people from our chief medical officer to our chief clinical officer to our chief operating officer. We could not be more different in style. I think substantively, we're very much a core team, but stylistically, and most people with thresholds in leadership positions, they won't use this word, but they display love and kindness and compassion every day, and more than me, I would say, every day in how they talk and how they walk and how they interact. So I guess my final words is that love is not a verb. It is an action, and act it out in a way that is meaningful to you, that is authentic to you. My new mantra is that leading with love will lead to good. And that's how I will sign off and just thank you. It's such a joy to have met you both 2 weeks ago. I know people are only hearing us, but I have the privilege of seeing you because we're on this thing called WebEx. And just like being able to look at your faces again brings me so much joy. And I've been doing this talk for 7 years in some fashion or form. And it's not fair to say that my favorite ever was with you all in the desert. I swear to God, the talk was fine. It was everything that happened after in the sidebar conversations at dinner that really just inspired me. And so being with you today for a half hour is just like the icing on the cake. So Awesome. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. So if our listeners wanted to reach out or connect with you after listening to the episode, is there a good way either on social media or a good way for them to connect with you?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I'm very active, if that's the word, prolific on LinkedIn. It's Mark Ishaug, Ishaug. I know it's a doozy, CEO of Thresholds in Chicago. So you can find me there. And my email is Mark with a K, mark.ishaug@thresholds.org. So you can reach out to me via email. You can link in with me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. I avoid one of the platforms because it has become very mean. So I don't want to be associated with stuff that doesn't bring joy.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you both. Have a great day.
Bye.
So after our interview with Mark Ishaug of Thresholds, I kind of wanted to talk to you guys a little bit more about what Stephanie and I talked to him a little bit about. We were talking about leadership styles and leading with love as a way of leading our teams instead of being the authoritarian, terrible people that sometimes we encounter in leadership. So I reached out to one of our friends of the podcast, hopefully are one of our future guests, Dr. Rohde. So Dr. Rodney Rohde, he was all the way in Edinburgh, Scotland. So I asked him some thoughts on how he leads and what his thoughts were on leading with love. So of course he came back with a very loving microbe-related saying. So I was going to go ahead and say that real quick. I
can hit us.
Heather's on the edge of her seat. She's waiting, anticipating.
I am.
See, Dr. Rohde, you've got a captive audience. So Dr. Rohde sent me something just saying, basically, in wine, there's wisdom. In beer, there's freedom. In water, there's rhythm. And in all these things, there's bacteria. So spread bacteria and spread love. So
I was going to say, in water, there's might be Vibrio cholera, depending on where the source is.
Also, I'm surprised oysters were not mentioned in the quote.
Those are in water.
Yeah, but I will say that I can tell how important this is to you, Aaron, on account of the fact that you're leading with this, leading with love before we lead with a joke, which I totally respect because this does sound like a very important topic. And I'm really excited to have the opportunity to be a part of chatting about it.
It does. And since you're going to have to wait for my joke till next episode.
I know. I'm dying. I don't know if I'll make it.
Yes. The buildup is crazy. It's a good one.
But this does seem important enough to forego the joke because it is this topic in general, leading with love or something that is related to that concept is something that I take very seriously, and it's a little near and dear to my heart because I think it's important. So appreciate you looping us in on this conversation.
So, I thought we could kind of reflect on your leadership experiences and what you've kind of encountered, and even kind of talk a little bit about how you lead your team.
Yeah.
What are your secrets?
So I'll give a little recap of my leadership experience. Unfortunately, it became a little jaded because my very first mentor in the lab was absolutely phenomenal. I would say that she did a fantastic job of leading with love. She supported me. She got me through tough times. She was always my biggest advocate. The reason why I say that it's unfortunate is because she did give me a very warped perception of what a leader is, because in my opinion, she did it the right way, and that's all I ever knew. And then it became that much more difficult for me to digest and accept what was so starkly different from my first experience. Going from someone that it was very supportive, I still touch base with her even today just to let her know how my career is going and how things are going for me personally in my career. That was just not the way that it was with every single manager or leader that I reported to throughout my career. So it's kind of a little bit of my experience, obviously at a high level. Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, so my experience with leaders is I unfortunately have never been able to find myself a good leader in terms of, like, well, Heather, you would be the exception, but we'll get into that.
Of course,
yeah. I was like, I'll wait for it.
In terms of, like, laboratory leaders, in terms of, you know, managers that I've directly reported to, I've just have never had that great of experience with that, but I've been fortunate enough to find good leaders outside the lab, specifically in the role of education, because part of my role at my prior institution was I handled all the students and the residents and the fellows that rotated through the laboratory. And the education coordinator in my prior role was a great mentor and a great leader that opened up a lot of doors to me in that particular space, and is part of the reason why, you know, I've been able to teach at a part-time level, and why now I'm a part-time program director at Santa Fe College. And you know, I just never found that directly in the lab, unfortunately. And now being in the industry, obviously, most people probably know that Heather is my manager, and she's, in terms of the concept of leading with love, I think Heather totally embodies that. She views us all as her peers, and that as her direct reports, if you will. And I think part of the problem with a lot of laboratory management styles is that a lot of lab managers lead with that authoritarian leadership style. And it's really unfortunate because at the end of the day, a lot of the laboratory managers are med techs like us, and they should lead with, you know, with the idea that we are their peers. And, you know, I think that's more so the leadership style that I fancy more than other ones. Instead of barking orders from the top, you know, we're all in the same boat and we all have the same mission, so we might as well work together as peers and not not the opposite of that.
So Kyle, you kind of said it already, but I want you to really hone in on what you think it means to lead with love.
Lead with love. You know, like, empathy is a big part of it. Being able to empathize with your direct reports, you know, your colleagues. I think that's a big part that's always missing from leadership and from management is the empathy component. And really just seeing from the tech point of view, what we're doing day to day on the benches, and understanding that it's one thing to be like, hey, this is what we need to get done. This is what I'm being told from, you know, administration. We need to do this. And more so being an advocate for the techs and not necessarily pushing back against administration on what the goals are, but working with admin on meeting those goals that are realistic for the techs at the time.
And I can see that with the way, just from the outside, that that's the way that you lead, Heather, because you are very inclusive. You're always taking those small moments to make sure your people are being heard, from what I can see on the outside. So, and Mark talks about that throughout the interview too, just taking those little moments, showing, like you were saying, Kyle, empathy and compassion. And luckily, like Kyle, I had the chance to have the same education leader and mentor, Carly Mansicklin, and she's
fantastic.
She led with compassion, or she still leads with compassion, and she's always somebody that she's always mentoring you, but you know, behind the scenes, she's always in, you're not in the room, she's putting your name out there, she's leading you into these great opportunities. So she's one of those people that just is one of a kind, and those are the kind of leaders you need, that you know that you can trust to kind of help lead you, push you, but also show some empathy and compassion and take time to be understanding.
And that's what and that's what I loved about Caroline, is that she challenged me to be a better educator. And she gave me a lot of big challenges that she knew I was capable of rising to the occasion to. And I think in the end, while, you know, a lot of it was, you know, it was a lot of hard work in the long run, but in the end, I became a better person, a better educator because of it.
Yeah. And I love that she could see something in you that at that time you didn't think was possible.
Yeah. She could see the spark, if you will.
Yes. That we all see ignited. Yeah.
So I actually am just having a massive epiphany moment right now, because I knew that you, Aaron, and you, Kyle, had had a mentor that you guys had both identified as being someone that you felt was a significant part of your career progression, growth, and success. But one of the things that I guess I never pieced together until now was that that person was the same for both of you. Am I understanding that correctly? Is that,
you'd say
that's accurate? And John, I know you're kind of behind the scenes, but I saw you nodding. And so it sounds like all three of you were able to have the same experience with a mentor that understood your individual talents and helped you to grow those talents and to also seek out a career path that would certainly exploit them. And I am a little actually blown away right now, knowing that all three of you have had this same person as a mentor. And now it just all makes sense, all of it, because the three of you, in terms of from a professional perspective, you can tell that not only did you just have someone that supported you and wanted you to grow, now I know that it was the same person. And now I'm just very, very enlightened, but also inspired, because that is the type of leader that I want to be. I want for three different people to say the same thing, despite having very different career paths and goals. And that to me is a shining example of what it means to lead with love, because she did not push all three of you to do something different right now. And she did not push you guys towards her agenda, towards what she thought was going to be the best path for a clinical laboratory scientist. She understood exactly what your strengths were, and she helped you to cultivate them into something that would be considered a career and a career path. So I think that that's pretty amazing.
Very exciting. And it's kind of good to be able to take like those lessons and those things forward with you as you're becoming leaders and as you are leaders. So for our listeners, make sure to at least those little moments do count. And Stephanie and I, and Mark talked about that a little bit in the front part of the interview. So are there any leadership styles that you think just don't work, other than the authoritarian one? As you were becoming a new leader, were there any things that you had tried that then you later realized, no, I should be leading, like doing more of a leading with love, empathy approach?
Yeah, I can tell you right now, I despise micromanagement. I know despise is a very strong word, but I find that, at least I've known many techs that are very capable individuals. If you just give them the opportunity to flourish and to act on their ideas, everybody wins in the long run.
It's funny that you say that, because I had a funny conversation with Hunter recently, who I think all of you guys know too. He'll probably show up on this podcast eventually, just by the nature of how things are unfolding. But I had a conversation with him and I said, hey, I need you to keep me in check. If I ever do anything that you feel is micromanaging, I insist and demand that you call me out on it. I want to know. And he was like, so isn't that request sort of along the same lines as micromanaging? And I was like, that's a good point. I'm like, so I'm going to rephrase it. And I'm going to say that if you feel that I am micromanaging to an extent that you don't like or are uncomfortable with, I'm just encouraging you to maybe bring that up instead of trying to micromanage how he tells me about my micromanaging. But we're all still learning, obviously.
Insane, but you recognize that fact too. As you were doing, you're like, oh, I'm micromanaging by trying to be compassionate about making sure I'm not micromanaging. So it's
actually, I didn't realize that on my own. It kind of required him to jokingly point it out. But all of this to highlight the fact that if he and I did not, as a manager in a direct report or peers, as Kyle mentioned, which I love, if he did not feel comfortable bringing that up to me, that me trying to not micromanage was actually causing a micromanaging situation, I would have never realized that on my own. And so I think that that's incredibly important, is the sort of safe space, culture of safety. That to me is what really lays the foundation for a manager and employee to be able to be successful together, is that you give them a safe space. You give them an environment that lets them come to you and say, hey, I had to do a thing outside of a protocol because of my knowledge and expertise, and it made sense. And please help me understand how to navigate this, because I feel like I'm kind of backed into a corner. And then, like Aaron said, empathizing with that scenario and saying, hey, not just immediately saying, no, you're going to follow the procedure and going to do the thing, this is just the way. You say, hey, I've been in a situation before where I felt backed into a corner and I wasn't sure of the way out. And so being able to come to your manager or to someone that you view as a mentor and saying, I'm in this tough spot, what do I do? How do I proceed? And being comfortable saying that I may not have proceeded the way that the protocol dictated, but here's the reasons why. Like, please help me navigate this. And to me, that's the most important thing. The foundation is the culture of safety.
And that safe space is so key, because I've known a lot of brilliant techs, a lot of techs with a lot of good ideas. And whenever they bring me good ideas, I'm like, oh, you should mention that to leadership. And they're like, I don't know. I don't want them to get mad at me, or I don't want any type of retaliation because of this idea. And I feel like that really hinders a lot of progress in the laboratory.
It does.
Having that mentality, because if the techs are in a situation where they feel scared to express themselves and express their ideas, then, you know, the lab doesn't progress as a result. And a result of that is you're stuck with a lot of miserable people in their careers that feel like they can't express themselves freely. And, it, you know, it's a lose-lose for everybody involved.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as a quality lab person, that's something that we try to, that point we try to get across to lab professionals and just people as part of the team that, and Heather mentioned it, the culture of safety thing, that if you don't feel safe to bring up your ideas and your innovation, you're not going to get anywhere. So it's
yeah. And then also, Aaron, from a quality perspective, like think about the applications from like a patient safety side of things. Like if techs are noticing problems within the laboratory and they have ideas to make those problems better, but they don't feel comfortable, you know, giving those ideas, then, you know, you run the risk of, you know, patient safety and other areas of that might affect the patient because of that. So it's twofold, like you're saying.
What I think we're not acknowledging is there are certain scenarios where patient safety might not be impacted for the negative, but we can't impact it for the positive if people are afraid to share what they think is going to improve laboratory processes. And then ultimately the downstream impact of that is better patient care. So we might not be making it worse, but we certainly can't be making it better if we live in this constant fear where our managers are managers and they are just interested in having the authority to make decisions rather than people who are willing and accepting of allowing their direct reports or their peers to run with an idea that they have that could improve things dramatically. But if they don't have that safe space, they're not even going to bring it up.
Yep.
Yeah. Because yes, you do have to get the work done, but there are ways to do it that are going to promote safety for the patient and also keep your team happy as well and feel like they're engaged. So kind of some nice little, do you have any good parting words for our listeners to kind of wrap up our conversation about leading with love? Do you have any, either for a new leader or for an existing leader that might be kind of doubting the approach or going, oh, well, I've been doing it like this for 20 years, so why doesn't this not? So do you have any parting words? I'll start with Heather.
Yeah, so the biggest advice that I can give is, while you should use your previous leaders to guide you, that doesn't mean that you have to be like them. So obviously, one of the leaders that I had early in my career was not good. I was going to say not great, but then I realized, like, just all around, like, not a good leader. Did not support me, did not respect me or my department, frankly. And so that person taught me what not to be. And then my first leader that I would consider a mentor responsible for the success of my career, whatever that means, showed me what it was to be a good leader, to be a good manager, to be a good mentor. But just because that person was good at what they did doesn't mean that that's how you have to be to also be successful in the role. You should absolutely take into consideration the things that you did not like from leaders that did not help you and really just stunted your progression. And you should take that to heart. I don't want to be like this. But just because somebody successfully led you to where you want to be doesn't mean that you have to be that kind of leader. You can be your own individual. You can be somebody that supports people with a little bit more authority if that's what's needed in your particular situation, all of those things. But definitely take note of the things that you didn't like and make sure that you don't become that person for your direct reports or your peers in the laboratory. Because a leader is not just someone in a management position. Yes. A leader can be someone that is sitting at the bench next to you that is 100% your equal on paper, in theory, all of those things, and they can still be a leader of the laboratory, and so can you, if you do all of the right things to inspire the people around you.
Yeah, and to that point, I'll raise a question. I don't have any parting words, but do you guys all think that management is the same thing as leadership? Or do you think they're two different things?
I think they should be the same thing, but it is very rare that they are.
Yeah. Two completely different skill sets. And unfortunately, a lot of times you have great managers that aren't great leaders, and you have great leaders that aren't great managers. And finding those two in one person is unfortunately a very rare skill set. But yeah.
I've been managing people for a while now, and I still am trying to get my footing to be able to be the best of both of those things. And it's an ongoing thing. And you learn not only from your mentors, your leaders, your managers, your C-suite, you know, whoever it is, you continue to learn from yourself. But the biggest lessons that I've learned have actually come from my direct reports. Those are the people that have really shined this beacon of light to the right way to do things. And all it really takes is taking a step back, putting yourselves in their shoes and saying, like, what would I want? Am I behaving in the way that I would want my manager to behave? And sometimes it takes a level set moment where you take a step back and you say, I'm not doing that thing. I am doing the thing that I would hate if somebody was doing this to me. And then you just change. You adapt. You do the thing that your people need. Your people and the organization that are relying on you to appropriately manage people and make and help them to grow in their career, that's part of your job. And if you're not doing that and you're just dictating, then you're not really a manager.
Yeah.
You're just a dictator, unfortunately.
No, I agree with that. That's great points. I mean, you don't have to hold a title as a manager to be a leader in the lab and actually lead part of your team. It's in the little things you do from day to day. Yeah. If you could be a bench tech leading somebody that's new to the area, if you're a little more seasoned, you could be leading your community. But you don't actually have to have the title. It's nice when they do transect and you actually do have a manager who is truly a leader in the lab and leads just with compassion and actually wants their people to succeed. But yeah, I've had those micromanaging leaders that don't get us anywhere. But I'd just say be the leader that you want
to lead you.
Yeah.
And one last side note. How many of you guys have had a leader in the lab that would come out of their office and read a bench?
Not too many, but it goes a long way.
That was my follow-up question. Is that to you? How important is that to you for someone who is dictating your day-to-day processes but may not actually understand them firsthand? To me, that is leadership 101, especially in the lab. You cannot go and mandate how things are going to work on the day-to-day if you don't understand them firsthand yourself. And that has been sort of my like guiding beacon, aside from all of the other personal and human elements of being a manager or a leader in the laboratory. I knew immediately, if I don't put myself on a bench rotation as a manager, then who am I? Who am I to try to tell the lab how to change things to make them better? I don't know what's better. I have no idea. But I'll tell you how I know. I put the gloves on and the lab coat on, and I wheel the cart of plates over, and I sit down and I log into the LIS, and I'm the one doing the results and all of the things. And to me, that's the first step. That's the foundation. Don't try to dictate what happens on the day-to-day if you've never experienced the day-to-day firsthand.
Yep.
That's leading with love.
Put yourself in the shoes of the techs and the people doing the work.
Yep. Otherwise, like, what are you talking about? People will just resent you. Even if you're the smartest, best person, nobody is going to respect you if you don't actually know what they're going through.
You gotta walk the walk and talk the talk.
Agree.